Devastating, historic, and deadly. The heart-stopping images and the heartbreaking sounds from Hurricane Ida's path of destruction. From Louisiana to the Northeast, we'll have live updates from the states grappling with this unprecedented storm. I'll also talk to one of Louisiana's most famous residents, musician and Dukes of Hazzard star John Schneider. He's going to share some surprising images he's seen in his state and what he plans to do to restore an iconic piece of TV history. Also tonight, a state law violates 48 years of Supreme Court precedent, and the court lets it slide for now. The issue is abortion. And the question is, will Roe v. Wade make it to year 49? And finally, she was a fan favorite on the smash hit Live PD, but she has turned in her badge for fans of a different kind, OnlyFans. And she's going to join us tonight on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. Roadways turned into rivers, homes now vacant lots, and a death toll that just keeps rising. That's where we stand tonight in the aftermath of Hurricane Ida. Before the storm hit, there were comparisons being made to superstorms of the past like Katrina and Sandy. Still, nothing could prepare residents for the devastation that this storm has inflicted along the East Coast, especially its devastating speed. Let me take you on a tour. In New York, a state of emergency declared by the governor. The water so high in New York that cars literally became floating away and passengers stepped on the floors of the seats of the buses.
The entire shirt was up to my chest. That's how high the water is.
Underground, they're all but one subway line out of commission due to flooding. Take a look at some of this video. Waterfalls, gushers in subway stations coming up the stairs. Commuters left completely stranded. Even the subway rats struggling to stay above water in New York City's iconic subways. This was absolute panic. I want you to listen to what some of the witnesses had to say.
All of us didn't like it. Was too much.
Cars are stuck and we have bodies underwater.
Over to Pennsylvania, much of the same. If not for the bridges and the tops of the cars, you would swear that these highways and parking lots instead are lakes. Dozens of people had to be rescued from the floodwaters in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, and major concern in Philadelphia, where the waters have risen 2 feet above a major flood stage. In Connecticut, heartbreaking news to bring you that a state trooper, 50-year-old Brian Mull, has died after his vehicle was swept away by the floods. Yes, he was on duty at the time, giving his life while trying to help save others. Just last week, that 26-year veteran was at a police graduation, welcoming the next group of officers to the force. And now to New Jersey, a state of emergency. 44,000 people still without power, 10 homes destroyed by rare tornadoes, 25 actually, if you include those terribly damaged. The governor announcing his state's death toll has now passed 23. Most of those deaths, like the trooper in Connecticut, were in their cars as they were swept away by the floods. A real strain on rescue workers like this one in Passaic City.
Just the flooding alone is not the priority. It's saving lives. There's people who are stuck in their vehicles, and we need to rescue those individuals.
At a press briefing, the governor begged his residents, please do not go near the waters. I'm joined by two people at the center of the devastation in the Northeast. News Nation correspondent Tom Negevin is in New York, and Anthony Gabriel is in New Jersey. He's the state planner for New Jersey's EMS task force, and he's been working nonstop rescuing people since the start of the storm. So thank you both for being here. I want to go to you, Tom, to report off the top. I have to keep asking, you know, every 15 minutes, what is the death toll? And as we were going to air, it was 46. I'm sad to even ask you, do you know if it's changed?
You know, it has not changed since we joined you on the air here tonight, but it's been changing so rapidly, as you point out, Ashley. It's really disheartening. And one of the most disheartening facets of that was watching New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy talk about it today, because what we may not have seen is that earlier today, he was thanking God, literally, in a press briefing this morning, that the death toll wasn't higher. By the grace of God, he said, only to have to join the media later in the day and announce that the death toll had climbed to 23 and was likely to climb much higher still.
I want to play a little bit of, you know, video that really underscores the power of the water. And this one comes to us from Bridgewater, Connecticut. The Brookfield Fire Department released some video in Connecticut of a mill building where the river is just gushing past it. It looks as though it's not going to survive it. Let's just listen for a bit. Anthony, I just want to ask you about the sheer volume, the speed at which this water came to the ground. Is this what the problem was, that too many people were caught off guard and this just happened so fast?
Yeah, absolutely. So from all the reporting that we were getting, we were getting conflicting reports that the graphs were showing that wasn't going to be as bad as they were expecting. We were monitoring the weather from the beginning of this, watching the tracks. We usually err on the side of caution, so we felt, you know, we were going to have our planning and our response to the worst case scenario, and good planning. We were in a way prepared for our operations to support the agencies throughout the state.
All right, I want to play another video, and this one showed the car alarms that were going off as cars were going under. Clearly, that would suggest that there was a need for a lot of rescues. Let me play this for you. This comes to us out of New York. Take a look.
I'm parked up on the hill. I'm all right.
Yeah, you're good up there.
Anything that's on the top, like facing the entrance, you're okay.
Tom Negevin, New York, to my knowledge, has never had a flash flood warning. So this is so historic. And we're also, you know, learning for those around America, New York is a commuter town. People come in by train, they leave by train, by the millions. And those commuter trains called Metro North, one of them at least, one set of lines, they're not operating. Do you know of any other stoppages because of the state that New York City's in?
The New York City subway system shut down for a time. It's back up and running now. In fact, actually, we've been keeping a close eye on it. We're at the 72nd and Broadway subway station on the Upper West Side of New York City. We were actually underground for some of our live reporting earlier in the day, watching the water still coming down the third rail underwater for a while last night along a lot of the subway lines. That was a problem, shut things down. The MTA bringing things up again very quickly today, but there were literally people beneath where we're standing right now, trapped, the water rising, no power, no water, no bathrooms, and they were down there actually for hours.
I still can't get over that video of the water flooding up the stairwell of the subway. There's another video I want to play. This one we found on Instagram. It's from the Northeast as well. And you'll see a big rig going through a parking lot. There are cars everywhere, but it does show you just how extraordinarily deep the water was. Take a look.
I'm parked up on the hill. I'm all right.
Yeah, you're good up there.
Anything that's on the top, like facing the entrance, you're okay.
So, Anthony, I understand that you actually had to get through these waters through your rescuing in the last several hours and throughout the night as well. You rescued, I think, a 400 people who were in a building collapse as well as a nursing home, and you got 93 people out. Can you walk me through a little of that work that you did, that heroic work?
So yeah, the one with the 400. So what actually happened was that we got dispatched for a reported structure collapse in Hudson County, and at the time of the collapse, they were reporting up to 400 people in the facility. Once we made our way there, which was a challenge in itself, just with the sheer amount of rain. So in that area, that was the peak of the storm for us. Just myself trying to get there. I was going through about 3.5 feet of water. I had water coming into my vehicle and almost didn't make it to the actual site. But fortunately, there was, at the time of the collapse, most of the people escaped the building. There was only a total of 7 patients, nothing too critical. So that all worked out very well. But, in this type of a storm, you know, you get that kind of a call, and now you're dealing with the stresses of just trying to get to the scene safely so you could try to help somebody else out. And then, you know, it just works. Sometimes it doesn't work out that well, but luckily we got lucky on that one. And the one today we had,
Oh, I was going to say, go ahead and tell me about the one today.
So the one today, we were requested down into a nursing home facility in Somerset County, where it's located is up against one of the rivers there. And they started taking out a little bit of water in the facility, so they called our organization to come down and help support them with that operation. And once you know, our first members arrived on scene, we did an assessment of the facility and the rising water. And it was coming up much more rapidly than we expected. So we ended up having to speed up the process of that evacuation. So with a handful of our staff members and the staff members from the facility, we were able to extricate and rescue all 93 of those victims before the water came up. In a matter of 45 minutes, we had close to two feet in the facility at the time that we got the last patient out and into the front of the yard waiting. Resources.
Just remarkable. You know, Anthony, I just want to ask you, I'm going to show something that I think everybody who's watching is familiar with. It is those iPhone or Android push notifications alerting you to danger, whether it's a flash flood or a tornado or an Amber Alert. I want to just show that video and ask you something about it on the other side. Take a look. So that's not the video that I was talking about, but you know that sound, and you see the push notification on your phone, and it says flash flood alert. I got one just before we came on last night, and I wonder, I mean, you can't have a better alert system for almost every person in America who has a phone to hear these emergencies, and yet it's almost like they become white noise because we really don't do anything. I don't think people take them seriously. I don't think they get to higher ground. I don't think they look at it and say, you know, I shouldn't drive. Are you finding that this is a problem? Despite these remarkable warnings, we're not behaving properly.
Absolutely. Again, like you said, it turns into that white noise. You know, when I see the alerts, I look at it, I see what's going on. I try to see where I'm at. And if I have to move, I'm going to move. Those notifications are extremely important, and a lot of people take those for granted. You know, not just the Apple or the Android phones. You get you know, notifications from the National Weather Service. Those things are there to help save lives and keep people safe. And it's unfortunate that, you know, we're at a point where it is that white noise, and a lot of people don't take it seriously. You know, it's there for a reason to keep us safe and, you know, out of harm's way.
Yeah, no kidding. Anthony Gabriel, thank you so much for doing the unbelievable work that you've been doing in the last 24 hours. And Tom Negevin, great reporting for us from New York as well. Thank you. Please, both of you, stay safe, because the continued threat is that some water is continuing to rise even as we speak. Still to come, John Schneider, you'll remember him from The Dukes of Hazzard. He's a star, he's a filmmaker, and he's also a Louisiana resident. Hurricane Ida pummeled his town, and yes, look at that. It destroyed the iconic General Lee car. He's going to join us next to talk about how you repair it and what about the damage to all of his neighbors and friends and fellow countrymen. Welcome back to our special coverage of the devastation caused by Hurricane Ida. Tonight, the death toll in the Northeast has passed 45. Rescuers have been working around the clock to pull people out of the floodwaters. In Louisiana, where Hurricane Ida made landfall on Sunday, much of the state is still reeling. Millions of Gulf Coast residents who faced down Ida's devastating winds and unrelenting rain face new dangers now, including widespread power outages that are expected to last for weeks. And that's deadly because of the extreme heat, around 107 with the index today. One of Louisiana's most famous residents is John Schneider, the filmmaker, musician, and iconic star of The Dukes of Hazzard. He shared this really distressing video of a tree through the top of one of those iconic General Lee cars. We are lucky enough to have John Schneider joining us tonight to talk a little bit about not only his state, but that vehicle. So, John, first and foremost, how are you doing, and how are your neighbors doing? Because it sure looks awful down there.
Well, it is pretty awful. And then we got hit with a flood right after it. So we had 19, right at 19 feet on the Tickfaw River where I live. The day after the, or 2 days after, rather, the hurricane. But you know what's so interesting is I'm watching your images. I'm from New York. So I'm from Mount Kisco, New York, in Westchester County. And
oh,
I just
man,
can't
this has got to be particularly, yeah, this has got to be particularly hard for you, knowing that where you live now is so, you know, in distress, and then your hometown is really struggling too.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk to me, John, talk to me a little bit about that vehicle. I mean, I couldn't believe that picture of seeing the tree that had, just tell me that you can repair it. That's a piece of, you know, American memorabilia there.
Well, I don't know. It's going to have more of a story now. You know, it's, I think it's always going to be the car that the tree fell on. There are many of these cars. That just happens to be my stunt car. That's the first car I ever jumped. But we got it out from under that tree today, and it's sitting about 20 feet to the right of where you're looking at it now. And of course it's a mess, but you know, I think I might just leave it that way, and you know, make it so I can get inside and drive it around, and it'll have a great story. You know, I don't believe in hiding your scars, so that car certainly has scars today.
And I want to be clear that, like, the images they're seeing, like the viewers right now, John, are seeing the car that's destroyed. That's one of the General Lee cars that you're talking about. And then
yes.
It looks like there's one up in the tree, but that's really a billboard. The one up in the tree is really a sign. It's
that's not a billboard. Yes.
It didn't fly up there with the wind, right? Yeah.
No. That's on plywood. That's part of our advertising. So that store that was my mother's house that you're looking at. She's no longer with us. But that is our bread and butter. That's called Miss Shirley's, and that's where we do all of our online business. So it's devastating, but we can fix that. It already looks a whole lot better. That picture was taken yesterday, and it already looks a whole lot better. The big issue for us, and the big issue for the folks in the rest of the country who are flooding now, that I don't think they understand, because they're not used to this. Pardon me, I'm hoarse. I've been yelling for 3 days. is we now have, if you have no electricity, and it's likely we won't have electricity in Louisiana, at least in my area, for 6 weeks. And as you said, it is very warm there. All the folks up in Tennessee, the folks in Boston, the folks in New York, the folks in New Jersey, they've got to understand that when their drywall gets wet, it is going to be a petri dish for mold. So they've got to cut their drywall out and get it out of the house. And they've got to remove all, it's a painful, necessary task. They have to get rid of all of their insulation, pull that out. Anything that has gotten wet, you need to cut it out 6 inches above your water line immediately. If you wait, then the water will continue to soak up into that gypsum board, and you'll have to get rid of all of it. And you'll then have mold growing in your 2x4s, which is deadly. So
well, that's fantastic advice from someone who, you know, lives in the area that's been devastated, you know, just 4 days before us up here. Real quickly, I do know that your film studio is on your Louisiana property, as well as that, you know, that General Lee vehicle that was damaged. Did your film studio survive? Is it okay?
Well, we had trees down everywhere. So the first order, you know, when you look at devastation like that, you have a tendency to kind of do nothing because there's so much to do. So you have to, those are the movies we make. What you have to do is eat the elephant one bite at a time. In Louisiana, it's very likely you have a friend who has a bobcat, a skid steer, and several chainsaws. Well, we do. And we had a wonderful friend of ours named Kelly from Total Dirt Solutions come in and clear our roads with trees that were 2 feet around. So we have damage to a couple of the sound stages. We have damage to that barn. There's a stage there. We do music right behind me. That's the barn I'm talking about. That has 4 feet of water in it. All the seating and things will have to be repaired.
Sorry about the delay. I just wanted to ask you, because I do know that you've been in Tennessee working on flood relief. I just want to ask you where, you know, what you're seeing, and if people want to help, what can they do? And give you the last minute or so for a plug for helping our fellow countrymen.
Well, I tell you what, the best thing you can do is get in touch with someone locally. People who will try to claim they are doing help, but they aren't. So I would say find a church in the area in Waverly and donate to that church. You saw a picture. One of the pictures there are a whole bunch of our firefighters from Long Island, and they are coming to help. So find a legitimate source where you can actually help. My suggestion is a church, a local church. If you want to help me, the only thing I need is sales. I don't want a handout. We are uninsured. That's a long story, but we're uninsured for flood in that area. But if you want to do something for me, then go to johnschneiderstudios.com and find something you can't live without. There's a 15% coupon code because of the General Lee. If you put in the word ouch, O-U-C-H, you will save 15%. You've got to keep your sense of humor. But
wow,
really what you
pictures.
Need to do is help those people. That happened because those cars went by. Help those people. Find a church in New Jersey. Find a church in New York State. And do what you can. You know, right now it's labor intensive is what it is. You could throw $1 million in cash to that family and they wouldn't know what to do with it right now. What they need is help on the ground. So support your firefighters, support the local churches.
And I'll go one more.
We need it.
You know, I always say I'm a board member of the Red Cross, and I always say it's a great place because that is 90% of the dollars that you give go to services, because 90% of the people there, like me, are volunteers. So, hey,
that's
John Schneider, I hope everything, you know, I hope you figure out a way to unwind out of that mess down there. And I hope that General Lee can
be New Yorker.
Presentable.
I'm a New Yorker. I'm resilient. We're headed to Tennessee to help them right now, actually. So listen,
well,
you take care.
You,
thank you for caring. God bless you back, and I will see you down the road.
And good luck to you. John Schneider, thank you for that. I hate seeing that vehicle like that because I'm a longtime fan of the Dukes of Hazzard. Good luck. Good luck.
Thank you.
So when we come back, Texans may have found a way to do what abortion rights opponents have been trying to do for almost half a century. And other red states are taking note. And the highest court in the land is giving them every reason now for hope. Welcome back. Whatever your feelings are on abortion, and to be clear, I'm not going to be making or seeking any value judgments on abortion right now, but it is beyond dispute that abortion rights in America are under strain tonight, more than at any other time since Roe v. Wade was decided back in 1973 when I was six. Already, other states led by Republicans are signaling their plans to copy an innovative, if legally dubious, Texas law that bans abortion at roughly 6 weeks. 6 weeks is before most women even know that they are pregnant. Today, the Republican governor of South Dakota announced that she has directed her state's unborn child advocate to, quote, immediately review the new Texas law and current South Dakota laws to make sure we have the strongest pro-life laws on the books, end quote. The Texas law openly runs afoul of Roe and later cases that permit abortion generally up to fetal viability. And if you're wondering what fetal viability means, it usually means about 22 weeks, sometimes longer. In fact, the case law not only permits abortion up to that point, it makes abortion a constitutional right. for women. And that's what makes this recent Supreme Court decision to look the other way all the more jaw-dropping. Again, whatever your views on abortion itself happen to be. And you probably heard me say that the Texas statute is innovative. Well, that's because it doesn't target women who seek abortions, and state officials actually play no role in enforcing the law. Instead, it's up to you, the private citizen, whether you live in Texas or not, anybody can bring a suit against a person who facilitates abortion after 6 weeks. Even if it's a neighbor who just gives a girl advice, or maybe an Uber driver who takes a patient to a clinic. The losing defendant, the person who might be that Uber driver, has to pay the plaintiff $10,000 and the plaintiff's legal fees. If the plaintiffs lose, defendants are still on the hook for their own legal fees. They don't get them back. That is surprising in itself as well. These unprecedented restrictions and financial incentives were allowed to take effect really without so much as a ruling from the trial court, let alone the highest court in the land, which is why the Chief Justice himself joined the High Court's liberal dissenters in a 5-4 decision issued at midnight yesterday, or today, however you view midnight. John Roberts wrote in part, "The legislature has imposed a prohibition on abortions after roughly 6 weeks, and then essentially delegated enforcement to the populace at large. The desired consequence appears to be insulate the state from responsibility." The majority opinion, which is unsigned, that's interesting, claims to focus solely on the challenge to the law instead of the law itself, saying, what are you doing coming here and arguing this? I don't really think you have any standing here, so goodbye, without actually looking at the law that was challenged. So here's the quote there. "This order is not based on any conclusion about the constitutionality of Texas's law and in no way permits other procedurally proper challenges." But the liberal side of the court wasn't having it. Justice Sonia Sotomayor said this, quote, "Taken together, the act is a breathtaking act of defiance of the Constitution, of this court's precedents, and of the rights of women seeking abortions throughout Texas and maybe other states." I added that last part. It's time to bring in my brain trust. Liz Wiehl is a former federal prosecutor, a longtime legal reporter and commentator, and the author of, around 19, probably still counting, books. Mark O'Mara is a civil rights and criminal defense attorney and sought-after trial consultant and commentator and one of the smartest legal minds I've run into in my 33 years of doing this business. Thank you both. All right, so I'm going to start with you, Liz, and I'm going to ask you what you found most eye-opening about what the Supreme Court did not do last night.
Right. Well, they allowed to stand, for at least now, this Texas law that enables, forces the public, you know, your friend, your barista, anybody who happens to maybe overhear you have a conversation about getting an abortion, or is somehow has some knowledge of that, to turn you in. And how? What's the mechanism? To sue, all right? Given the ability to sue to private citizens. It's sort of like a private abortion police. And I've been doing this, actually, you said, for a long time. It's a long time. I've never seen kind of such a crafty way of getting around Roe v. Wade as to deputize all of us, the whole public, right? Anything that we do, anything that we hear, overhear, we see that is in furtherance of an abortion, we can sue that party, as you said, down to an Uber driver taking a woman to the Planned Parenthood.
So, Mark O'Mara, for the Biden administration's part, Merrick Garland, who's the attorney general, is, quote, looking at all options, which I think if you are an abortion activist, you'll think, okay, well, maybe there's some room for change here. Maybe this isn't a final nail in the coffin. But for those who are against abortion, they think, no, the Supreme Court has said what it said, and now other states should, you know, consider shadow legislation. And you just heard Kristi Noem from North Dakota saying, let's take a peek. And Mississippi is coming up with another ruling in the next week. So where do you see this going? Can we Can we see any other change, given the language that the Supreme Court used? They seem to be whiffing on the idea that the people who brought the challenge weren't the right people and didn't have standing. So is there room for someone else to challenge?
Yes, there is. It was a very creatively created statute that attempts to take out the normal processing by way of law is looked at by the courts. So what it says is, look, the state of Texas has nothing to do with this. We're going to allow private citizens to do it. In effect, what it tries to do is preempt the court system from passing on the unconstitutionality of it. And I think what the Supreme Court said was much more procedurally based than substantively based, meaning by that they didn't sit back and say, this is a good statute and we approve this abortion statute. What they said was, you're not supposed to be here yet. Let us wait until the proper case comes before us, until somebody does sue an Uber driver or a doctor or a lawyer who gives advice to a client to say, I think you should do this about your issue concerning an unwanted pregnancy. Let that happen, let that make its way through the court system, and then when we as the Supreme Court get to it, as eventually they might, then they're going to rule on that. And I think what they will do, unless they overturn their own precedent of Roe versus Wade and some other progeny, I think they're going to look back and say, Texas, it was a wonderful attempt to try and get around the normal processing for these types of statutes, but you can't because it violates the U.S. Constitution.
Well, that would require someone to be brave with deep pockets to go ahead and, you know, perform that abortion or drive that patient or, you know, give her some advice on what to do and then be that, you know, that challenger. But at least, you know, it's interesting that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's whole career was based on, you know, women being equal. And that abortion rights allowed a woman to be equal. Let me read something from her 1993 Senate confirmation, because I think it's very telling what Ginsburg said back then. She said, the decision whether or not to bear a child is central to a woman's life, to her well-being and dignity. When government controls that decision for her, she's being treated as less than a fully adult human responsible for her own choices. But you know, Justice Ginsburg had a choice as well, to step down off the court and allow, you know, a Democratic president to appoint her successor. And that didn't happen. And so Donald Trump got his successor. And this is the way our system works. So should anybody be complaining at this point? Please.
Well, I think the complaint here on this narrow ruling, right, and Justice Ginsburg would just be, you know, anyway, rolling in the grave. But the complaint here on this narrow ruling, though, is to make sort of the public into abortion police is really what this law is all about. Because why the state doesn't want to get involved? Why does the state not want to get involved? Because they know that it's a very good chance they'll be overturned by the Supreme Court, or even before they get to the Supreme Court. And the effect is devastating right now. So you could say, well, women will just, let's just wait and see what the lower court says in Texas. But right now, there's an undue burden placed on a woman in Texas trying to get an abortion after 6 weeks. That undue burden, it seems to me, is a real constitutional quagmire, because undue burden is exactly what we're not supposed to place on women seeking abortion at 6 weeks and after, right? And so that just turns the whole system upside down, really, and we're putting it at the steps of the feet of lawyers who craftily were able to put this together and say, hey, this is a loophole. This is a way around Texas law, which is going to be against running afoul of Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, it does feel weird that, you know, citizens are deputized to carry this out. And if they've got grudges, I mean, there's all sorts of ugliness that could play out. But it's a fascinating. Hey, both of you, thank you. Lise Wheel, it's good to see you again. It's been a while. And Mark O'Meara, thank you, as always. It's good to see you, too. Okay, so in our next segment, she was known as the Bun of Justice. And if you used to watch the A&E hit TV show Live PD, you know exactly who I'm talking about. But she has turned in her badge and her gun and made a career change, featuring the Buns of Justice. Holy moly. former officer and current self-described plus-size booty model on OnlyFans. Andrea Zendejas is going to join us next. I want you to take a look at this headline from the New York Post. It reads, Thin Nude Line. Former Texas cop and live PD star trades badge for OnlyFans. Now, that is quite a career change. That former officer's name is Andrea Zendejas, and she was a fan favorite on A&E's Live PD, as you can see from here. Once known as the Bun of Justice because of that rather large bun of hair that she wore as she patrolled the streets of El Paso, Andrea Zendejas has decided to lose the uniform. And she's also decided to lose a few other articles of clothing, too. And Andrea joins us now. Officer Zendejas, I'm telling you, I nearly lost my lunch. I thought, that's Andrea with the thing and the thing on the thing? What made you decide to do such an incredible switch of careers?
Well, it was never really part of the plan. I was leaving the police department anyway. I had set it up to where I would be leaving this summer. One day during patrol, it was a joke, like a running joke, because my social media following, my partner was like, hey, you should open an OnlyFans. you have a lot of fans. And I was like, no, you know, we just joked about it. And when I dropped my paperwork to actually leave the department, I'm like, eh, what's the worst that could happen?
Well, so, that's a good question. So what's the worst that can happen? I often wonder that. I mean, you do have like 70,000 Twitter fans and 28,000 Instagram fans, so it is kind of logical you would do well. But did you get any blowback from fellow officers or anybody else who pruriently might have said, hey, what are you doing?
I did, actually. I started about a month from leaving the department. So, and I was kind of flying under the radar with it. I wasn't really promoting it or anything like that because I'm not fully nude, and I don't do any kind of pornographic material. So it's a little different for me. It's a lot of plus size lingerie stuff, never anything to do with the department that I was affiliated with. So when I opened it, of course, it's like high school, right? Word gets around. people start talking. So, yes, I did get a little bit of backlash for that. But that's okay. It's over, and sure. I'm on my way.
Question for you. You know, for those who might not understand, you know, you can look at anybody's Instagram for free as long as they accept you if it's private. But then the OnlyFans, you pay a sub fee. That's called a subscription fee. And yours, I think, is somewhere around $15, which, girl, that's high. You know, a lot of them are around $9 or $4.99, I'm told. So are you raking it in? Like, how many subs do you have?
Right now, as of today, I'm pushing somewhere around 2,100.
So that's pretty solid. I mean, this could be a full career for you, right?
It's definitely a full-time job, for sure, 100%. It's a lot of interaction with the subscribers, it's very time-consuming, which is, it's okay. It's a little bit of a... it's a bit of a career change for me because I wasn't really planning on working for the next year or so. I was trying to just, you know, chill out and kind of relax and enjoy life for a little bit. And, now I fell into another full-time job. So, but it's okay.
So have you heard from my former colleague when I was working with, you know, Big Fish and doing live rescue and filled in a few times on Live PD? My former colleague, Dan Abrams, the host of Live PD, is now my new colleague here at News Nation. Have you talked to him at all?
Nice.
Or have you, does he know that you got the new OnlyFans page?
I'm sure everyone knows by this point, but no, I don't talk to them regularly.
News gets around. It does get around. Hey, real quick question for you, because I know for a lot of people, you know, they question whether they want to do that, whether they have a difference, you know, in their moral choices or pressure from community. But you also have kids, right? I don't know how old they are, but how old are they and what do they think about it?
So I do. I have a 15-year-old and an 8-year-old. They know that I do pictures because I do a lot of professional pictures as well. And I make it very known, especially to my daughter, that not doing anything ratchet, as they say. it's just a lot of plus size modeling, and people really, really like it. So, but I you know, I make sure my kids know, you know, mom, if anybody asks, mom just retired.
Oh, man. Okay, well, listen, this tweet you announced on July 27th, this was your last day, so it was really heartfelt. You said, last days on patrol, super emotional time for me. I will miss my brothers and sisters in blue. It's a family like no other, and I'll always have their backs no matter what. It's a different kind of love and relationship when you're willing to die for one another. So, Andrea, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about Live PD being canceled, not due to the ratings, but also it was really for the PR reasons in the height of the protests surrounding the murder of George Floyd. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about whether your decision to leave the force and send that email that was so sad had anything to do with the increased scrutiny of people, you know, looking at the police. When we come back, the answer from Andrea Zendejas, Officer Zendejas. Back now with Andrea Zendejas, who went from busting bad guys in El Paso on Live PD to self-proclaimed plus-size, big booty having gunslinging, tatted lingerie loving all-American model. I have to ask you, with all that's happened, and you know the PR after George Floyd and the struggle that police forces have had, did that factor into your decision to leave the force? That the increased scrutiny on police.
Well, honestly, I mean, I'd be lying if I said no. It did have a little bit, you know, it caused a lot of extra stress, which was kind of expected, I guess. It had a little bit to do with it, but I already had my mind made up anyway. Just kind of, you know, made me decide maybe sooner.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's nice to see you again. I wish you luck in your new career. I will miss seeing you out with your bun and the officer, you know, the uniform, et cetera. But certainly good luck. It's nice to have you on tonight. And thanks for being
here.
Thank
you so
much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Andrea Zendejas, one of my favorite characters from Live PD. Thanks for joining us tonight, everyone. We'll see you right back here tomorrow night.